Hi, this is Michael Veazey of Amazing FBA. Our sister podcast, The 10K Collective, is the world's newest e-commerce podcast. It's geared to the exact needs of 6-, 7-, and 8-figure Amazon and e-commerce business leaders. It's actionable but focused on how to scale your business and grow really fast for sale or long-term profit, not short-term hacks. We have in-depth talks with real e-commerce sellers and experts in industries like sourcing, team building, and managing cash. To find us, just search your podcast app for 10K Collective. That's 10K for kilo, COLLECTIVE. We are live on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Android, Stitcher, and Spotify to name but a few of the apps we're rolling out to. Or you can go to 10kcollective.com for show notes or to listen online.
I hereby introduce to you Mr. Michael Veazey.
Hey, 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 welcome to Amazing FBA, the place to be for UK-based Amazon entrepreneurs. I'm your host, Michael Veazey. Welcome to the show. Let's come back to the question of choosing products. You've given an amazing overview and shot down some sacred cows, which is really, really helpful because there's a lot of head trash that gets in the way. Let's just touch on another question, which is private label. So if Amazon and FBA is a really viable business model, how viable is private label in the sense that we're just putting our logo or different packaging on an existing product, but that doesn't create much uniqueness? Is that still a viable business product model in 2019?
Private label is viable. I mean, if you're really able to invent something where there's known demand on Amazon, that does give you a competitive advantage. There's major opportunity, in exploiting some patent stuff and some licensing stuff. But even the old school, like let's find something and just stick our name on it, that still works, but not in commodities. And you need to differentiate. You can't just go and find something on Alibaba and stick your name, your logo on it and put it out on Amazon. You're going to have to do some sort of bundling. You're going to have to do some sort of differentiation where you read the reviews of the other people and like, oh, everybody's complaining about this particular item or this particular feature. You're going to have to find a way and work with the manufacturer to fix that. And once you can do that, then you can have a good chance of success. Or you got to differentiate with the packaging, with the presentation, with the with the bundling where you combining stuff together. There's still plenty of opportunity there, but you have to put up a little bit of a moat. I mean, I've done both. I've never had a hijacker sold millions of dollars, have sold and continue to sell millions of dollars on Amazon. I've never had a hijacker, never had a counterfeiter, because my products, I differentiate them. With packaging, it's very strong packaging, very strong imagery. I don't just take something off of Alibaba as is. I will customize it. I've also developed my own products. I've had an idea in my head for like a dog bowl in the shape of a bone that would slow down your dog. I sketched it on a piece of paper. I found someone on Upwork. They happened to be in Argentina and did all the 3D design work and stuff for me for like $400. I then found a factory that does stuff for Coca-Cola. There's all these plastics and silicone for Coca-Cola. They made the mold, I did two different sizes, cost me $3,000 for each mold. And I put that product out and it's been like an award winner and done really, really well. And so there's nobody else that has that product. There's lots of people selling slow feed dog bowls, but nobody has my product and they're not going to have my product unless they're going to go spend a lot of money on a mold. And so far, no Chinese factory has been willing to do that. Another product I developed from scratch is back in 2015. But right when the Apple iWatch was coming out, people were selling docks on Amazon. There's tons of like these wooden docks and bamboo docks and little plastic ones where you could put your watch on there, your Apple Watch, and it would charge it. And I saw them all. I was like, these are all crap. I wouldn't want this on my desk. So I developed my own, and it had a Bluetooth speaker inside. It had a nightlight. It had three ports on the back. It hit all the cables on the bottom, so you don't have all these cords hanging out. You could charge your iPhone, your iPad, and several other things. I sketched that out. I found a factory off of Global Sources, not even Alibaba, globalsources.com. They said, hey, we'll do all the design work for you. You just pay us $1,000. And we'll take the $1,000 off the production run. So as long as you end up making the product, we'll take it back. I was like, okay, no problem. They did all the design work. They were sending me 3D renderings. I look at it and say, no, how if we tweak this, or I don't like the way that looks. It got to the point where they would send me a 3D file. I would download the file. I would take it to a guy here in Austin that would make a 3D print of it. So it's just plastic. You know, it's, it doesn't look like it's not the same material. It doesn't turn on, but it's like plastic. And I would take that, but I could hold it in my hand, you know, and look at it and make sure the cables fit in the little grooves and everything. I take that to the Apple store and say, can you pull out all the watch bands, you know, out of the drawer? I want to check every single watch band that you guys sell and make sure it fits, make sure it doesn't touch the light or the speaker on the bottom when it's dangling down. And I had to make some modifications. And then I did another round, and then we went to a prototyping where it actually functioned. Made like 10 of them so I could test them, and then went to full production. This product, it cost me $30,000+ in molding costs. And my landing cost on this was $22. But I was selling them on Amazon for $89. And that's another thing, too, that back on product selection, where a lot of people make a mistake is they don't do the right. It's not only about your budget, but you have to have the margins to work with. And so I see, you know, even some of my students in the Freedom Ticket course and stuff, a lot of times they'll come to me and say, hey, this is not working. And I say, okay, what's the product? And they say, we're selling it for $19.95. And I say, what's your landing cost? So $12. Or they'll say $8. And I say, well, what's your shipping? And what's your, you know, by the time we add it all up, it's $12. Like, you can't make money on that. Unless you're selling massive volume and there's nobody else driving the price down, no other competitors, you can't make money on that. So you need a 4 to 5x markup. Anything that's under $100, if you don't have a 4 to 5x markup, your chances of success go way down, unless you're just able to move serious, serious volume and you're willing to work on pennies or pounds. It just goes way down. And so in my case, it's $22 for this Apple Watch charging dock times 4 would be 88. I sold it for $89.95. At some point, I had to go down to $79.95, but that's still workable. That leaves a lot of money for PPC, money to factor in returns and damages and everything else, and still make a really healthy profit. That product at Christmas 2015 was selling about $16,000 to $18,000 a day, and then continued to sell in the five figures into the next year until I ran out of stock.
What was that figure in Christmas 2015?
$16,000 to $18,000 per day.
Oof.
Dollars per day. You know, there's products that sell a lot more than that on Amazon, but it was nice. And this was in a market that was saturated. I think if you type an Apple Watch dock back in 2000, at that time, there's probably 10,000 results. But you look at the page, every Tom, Dick, and Harry had the same thing, some sort of bamboo-looking charging dock. They're probably still for sale on there. And there's just a different logo on it. And that's it. You know, and they're all just competing on price. You have to differentiate. And some people are like, well, these are like $15. You know, everything's on the page is $15. Kevin, yours is $89. The people aren't going to pay that. I was like, look, Apple people, you have to get in the mind of your customer. Apple people will pay. Apple people is paying, you know, $1,000 for a phone. They want quality. Yeah, some of them are cheap. They're going to go buy the cheap docks, or it's a gift for somebody. They don't care. But there's people like me that will pay for it. Am I going to have the number one best selling dock on Amazon? Absolutely not. Apple dock, you know, it was difficult for me to stay on page one because everybody else was way cheaper. So I just kept getting bumped off of page one, people doing all kinds of tricks, you know, to launch and whatever. So, but I went after the more longer tail keywords where there wasn't the competition. These guys weren't fighting for it. And I could be on page one for longer tail keywords. You put together enough of those, you can have a great success. And that's another mistake a lot of people make in product selection is they think that they've got to go after these big, huge keywords. That's not the way to do it. The way to do it is to find, I like to find products that have lots of doors, lots of ways to break into the house. You know, if you go to someone's house and it's like Fort Knox and the only way in is through the front door, chances of you getting in that house are not that great. But if you go to somebody else's house and they got 50 windows, they got a back door, front door, side door, and you forgot your keys, there's a lot of different ways you could break into that house to get in if you need to. So I look at the same way on product selection is I'd like to choose products where there's lots of ways to get into the house. And so I like to see at least 20 keywords in the top 1 million. On Amazon, which basically means at least 20 keywords that have over 600 in the net. This is the U.S. market, over 600 searches per month, unique searches per month, which would have been called exact. You don't have that information anymore, really. But 600 exact searches per month, which is roughly the top 1 million in the U.S. market. You know, Amazon now, if you have brand analytics, they have something called search frequency rank (SFR). It gives you a number of every keyword. It's kind of like a it's kind of like a total BSR for all of Amazon. You know, we have BSRs for categories. We know we're the number three seller in automotive, but we don't know how does that compare across all of Amazon. So SFR is basically a similar to a BSR for everything on Amazon. And so I like to see 20 or more keywords being that top million, which is basically 600 or more. And that way I have lots of different ways to break into the house. And so I can start off with the easy doors down, you know, 15 to 20, where it's easy for me to get to page one. I don't have to give away nearly as many units. I can rank down there with easier with PPC, and I can get my first handful of reviews start coming in. If there's a problem with my product, I can fix it on the next batch, or fix my listing if something's not clear or whatever. And then over time, over the course of 3, 4, 6 months, I will then start targeting those bigger keywords. After I get the bugs worked out on the lower end, get ranked, I will make sure, if the number one keyword is Apple charging dock, I'll make sure that's in my title. Because basically the way Amazon works, the algorithm works, this is simplified, but someone types in iWatch dock, they type in iWatch dock and say that's keyword number 18, and they buy my product after typing in iWatch dock, I get 1 point for the word iWatch dock. But if the word Apple charging station is in my title somewhere, when they made that sale for iWatch dock, I get like a tenth of a point. I mean, this is a simplified example just to make the math simple. It doesn't quite work this way, but just to give you the idea. So for every one of those 1 point ones, I'm getting a tenth of a point for the other one in my title, which is way up in the search rank. So if I get 10 sales on this low-level keyword, it's like making one sale on the big keyword. You put together enough of these low-level keywords because you got all these doors, eventually all tides rise, all ships. And you're gonna rise up over time and start ranking well on a lot of different keywords, and you're going to do really, really well. Or if you decide later to do some sort of launch or giveaway or whatever your tactic is, you're going to be starting from a much better position, maybe on page 3 instead of page 300. And it's going to be much easier for you to rise up. So those are important things to me when I'm looking at products to sell, is keyword demand. Helium 10 tool just came out with this like a couple weeks ago, where now you can search in their black box tool based on keywords. So you can look for opportunities. They used to have it where it would be products, and you would look for, something that's doing X amount of dollars, kind of the Jungle Scout way, X amount of dollars, has so many reviews, and it's in this category and stuff. And you would actually find products, and then I would have to take that product and then go, okay, how many doors are there I can break into this house? They now have it in their tool where you don't need to do that. You can find the opportunities that have all the doorways with a keyword search tool, and that's huge. It's a game changer, and most people unfortunately don't know how to use these tools. There's a lot of really good software tools out there in the US and the UK. A lot of people know the basics, but they really don't know how to get into them. And they know how to drive their car from their house to the grocery store, but they don't know how to race an F1 car on the track. People that know how to race the F1 cars on the track with the same car and the same engine, the same everything, same software, are the ones that are really crushing on Amazon. This is a numbers business, like we said earlier, the cash flow. It's all a data analytics. If you're not good with data analysis, get someone on your team that is, because that's where all the money's made.
Okay, so that neatly brings me into one of the questions I had, which is, should you start with the numbers? Because I know a lot of people aren't necessarily fluent with numbers, or if they are, one of the issues with using the tools like Jungle Scout, Helium 10, whatever. I know that even Jungle Scout's used a lot in China, for example, so where people actually physically make the widgets. Is it good to start with numbers, or should you start with something from your own life or something you know and care about, and then move on to the numbers? What's your take on that?
There's nothing wrong with you if you come across. I mean, I'm out all the time with my wife somewhere, and I'll see something. She'll be at the beauty spa or whatever, and I'll see something on the counter for sale. I'm like, that's interesting. I never heard of that. First thing I do is I look and see if there's any demand for it on Amazon. So I'll just type it in to Amazon as a search. I don't even go to Jungle Scout. I'm like, let me see what the BSR is and this, or how many products come up. And if it looks like an opportunity, I'll explore that. So that's things from my everyday life. And I've probably found one or two products that way. But the vast majority of my products are coming from doing data analysis, where I'm sitting down like, okay, let me see what are people searching for right now? What do people want? And where are the opportunities that amongst what they want, where I think I can come in and compete? And that's keyword demand. And so I believe all product selection should start with keyword demand. I've been saying this for 3 years, even before these tools came out to allow you to do it just recently, easily. I was having to do it back doorway. But it doesn't start with me with I mean, you can run Jungle Scout and you can type in Apple Watch dock, and you're going to get a results in Jungle Scout or whatever tool you're using. And it's going to show, oh, look at all these Apple Watch docks. They're selling, you know, $100,000 a month, $200,000 a month. Your eyes get all big and you're like, ah, I'm going to do an Apple Watch. You know, they don't have too many reviews or whatever. You see some sort of opportunity, you decide to do it. But what you don't know is when you typed in Apple Watch dock, are they really making their sales off of Apple Watch dock? They actually may be making their sales off of iWatch charger. And until you can figure that out, where are the sales coming from? What's driving the sales? Where's the opportunity coming from? You can't really make a smart decision on a product selection. I mean, you might get lucky and you pick the right keyword, but you got to figure out where the sales coming from. And that's where these third-party tools like Helium 10 Cerebro, for example, will allow you to compare like 10 different ASINs at once and find all these find all the keywords that they're ranking in the top few positions on a page for. Most likely, those are what's driving the sales. And if you combine that with the new brand analytics data, if you have access to that, not everybody does, if you have access to that, you can make some really intelligent decisions based on the data.
Amazing. Yeah, we talked about brand analytics. So Danny, who we both know well, Danny McMillan was on quite recently talking about brand analytics. So yeah, obviously you need to be brand registered. So you need to have a trademark registered and all the other sort of things that go with that. So yeah, they're certainly good for established sellers. For those who are coming in new, I guess that's not a viable option. But so one of the things that I find working with fairly newish sellers, and they often come to me for that, with that pain point, is like I say to people, okay, so you want to work with me one-to-one consulting, great. So what are your big what are your goals? What do you want? What are you aiming at? What are your blocks? And they often say the biggest block is analysis paralysis. So how would you deal with that? Because obviously, as you say, I respect totally, this is a numbers game. Absolutely, analysis is critical. How do people get over that? Or what do you think that the biggest problems are and the solutions to those are?
Yeah, there's a big fear, and people will just overanalyze. Because I think one of the big reasons for that is a lot of people, they're taking all the money they have, you know, five or ten. They're afraid of failure. They have $5,000 or $10,000, and that's their life savings. And they're like, I got to make this work. You know, I got to quit my job. I'm so sick of it. Or I got to have a better life for my family. I got to make this work. And so they're afraid of failure. I think that's the number one thing. I think you need to go into it and be willing to fail. Because I know a lot of successful sellers, my first product bombed. But I learned a whole heck of a lot off of that, how the process works. And my second product was a big hit. So I think that's why a lot of people, they're like, am I making the right decision? And they're afraid to send $5,000 or $10,000 to China, because what if they rip me off? I got to put it in escrow. You know, I tell people, you putting money in escrow just makes you look like an amateur. You're going to get taken advantage of more by doing that than you are just paying them straight. So there's all these fears. It's because they're not confident in what they're doing. They still don't feel like they have mastered it or know it enough. And they're so excited. They want it to work. And so they just get in this paralysis mode where they overanalyze. It takes me about an hour and a half to find a product. That's it. And then I go with it. I don't sit there and, you know, I might sit down on a weekend and I'll find 15 products. Each one, maybe an hour, hour and a half max to find them, opportunities. And then I'll end up knocking some of those down as I dive deeper, because it's either that I can't get it for a good price or there's some other issue that comes up, and those 15 might get whittled down to two or three that I actually go with. And then I go with them. I don't look back. I don't second guess myself. I just go with them. Are they all going to succeed? No. Sometimes you're going to have some failures, but that's okay. You can't hit a home run if you don't swing. So, you know, you can't score a goal if you don't kick towards the goal. That's why a lot of people, I think, have this paralysis is they're not confident. And you need to have that confidence and just do it. Just get in. If it doesn't work, you're going to learn a lot. And hopefully you have the ability to come back and do it again. Now, some people say, well, I don't. This is all the money I have. I have no other way to get money. It has to work for me. Well, if that's the case, you know, hire a consultant, someone like Michael or somebody that can, after you've done the initial stuff, can take a look at it for you. And you're like, I'm thinking about launching these three. Which one should I do? Get their opinion. Don't put it on Facebook and ask people's opinion. Don't ask your friends and family. Get someone that's an expert, like Michael or something, take a look at it and say, hey, you know, I think this one right here has a pretty good shot. You know, if it's my money, I would probably put my money behind this if I had found this. And maybe that's the little boost that you need. And sometimes that can be worth paying a little bit of money to get that little boost so that you can do this. And, you know, it's a lot of people that take courses. They buy a course, they watch a webinar, and they buy someone's course. Only about 20% of the people actually ever finish the course. Most people don't even finish the course. And out of the 20% that finish the course, only about 5 or 10% ever even launch a product. So it's a very small percentage. People, they want instant gratification. They want something now, and they're afraid to take that risk. If you're afraid to take risk, you shouldn't be an entrepreneur. Stay working for somebody else. Entrepreneurs take risk. And with risk, the bigger the risk, usually the bigger the reward. And without risk, there's not a whole lot to gain. And I always say that success without failure is luck. Some of the biggest mistakes I've made in my life are the reason that I'm able to do what I'm able to do now, because I know not to repeat those. I know what happened. I know the pains. It was my own money, my own time, my own whatever. I've had a bankruptcy in the past because I did some stuff, 15, 20 years ago when I did some financial stuff wrong. I've been through it, all the ups and downs. That's part of entrepreneurship. And so if that's not you, or that's not your personality type, then you might want to think about doing something else.
Couldn't agree more. All of the above. I'm into that. And just a couple of things. It's very sweet of you to say hire a consultant like Michael. I mean, yes, sure, I do work with people. And I do believe that anyone who's been around the block for a while and really knows this space will increase the probability of success for sure. And it's worth doing. And a lot of the time, the way I help you, it doesn't sound very positive. The way I've helped people is like they're about to go and spend literally $20,000 or something, which is everything they have, as you said, on a product. And I just ran the numbers for 5 minutes or even less and just said, look, it's like, as you said, the total landed cost, including the freight, which is the bit people like to overlook sometimes crazily, it is so high. I said, they're never going to make a profit. Please tell me, please swear you will not buy this. But the other thing to say, though, is equally, I've turned people down who basically had their wallet out to hire me as a consultant because they said, can you give me a guarantee? And I said, absolutely not. And if you need a guarantee, this is not for you. Entrepreneurs don't have guarantees. That's the kind of the point. So just to echo what you're saying, and just to put that, no consultant in the world can guarantee a success. If they claim they can, I think that's a bit suspicious, or they're a genius. But also the other thing is, if you're looking for somebody else to solve a problem for you, or you're looking to pass the buck or to pass the responsibility on somebody else, I mean, obviously we all have a responsibility to give honest and truthful and clear and professional level information, which is what you're giving in absolute spades, which is fantastic. But the responsibility is ultimately the entrepreneur's. And I just really believe in that very strongly, that I really will not work with people now, because I don't think I can serve somebody like that. I just think, like you said, nothing wrong with having a day job, nothing at all wrong with that. And I think people oversell themselves into the idea they should be or have to be an entrepreneur. And maybe especially in American culture, but British culture these days a lot as well. And just such a colossal mistake. It's not an alternative to a day job, right? So I mean, just want to underline that.
What happens a lot of times is people have these visions that they want to go out and start their own business, and all they end up is creating another job. They just end up trading hours for money. And it's the same thing they were doing when they were working for somebody else and taking a regular paycheck. At least there it was a regular paycheck, versus when you're on your own, it may not be so regular. And so, that's a problem with a lot of people too. You're better off to just keep your job and just look for other opportunities, or change jobs in the same field, or go into a new field or something, and get that reinvigoration and that re-excitement that way versus entrepreneurship. It's not for everybody.
Absolutely. And yeah, there's nothing wrong with going and negotiating a rise with your boss as well. I mean, that might actually just give you an extra boost if that's all you're looking for. And Amazon is so not suited to that. It's untrue. So I really like your honesty about that. Just going to wrap up on a couple of more practical points then. The tools you're talking about, using tools to find products in about 10 hours for 10 potential products, and then knock a few of them out because they weren't practical. What's your sort of basic process for that? Or can you give a sort of simple version of that for listeners and viewers?
Well, the main tool that I use is Helium 10. That's just, I think those guys, they're good. I mean, Market Intelligent, or Viral Launch has some really, this is for the US market. There's some other tools for the UK. Some of these work in Europe as well, but I primarily focus on the US market. So Helium 10 and Viral Launch are two really good tools for this kind of thing. Jungle Scout's okay. It's not my choice. It is the big one. They're the original guy, but I think there's things that do better. The thing I like about Jungle Scout, though, is they do have the database now, the supplier database. So in the United States, all the import records, the bill of ladings, are public information, unless you know how to turn that off. Most people don't. So you can actually find suppliers really good. You can see who's supplying different people on Amazon in the US by using that database. And then maybe that's a supplier you'll contact to make your product or something because you see that they're making a good product, a 5-star product on Amazon, there's, you know, whatever. So I use Helium 10, and I start with the keyword demand. So I use in the black box tool, looking at keyword demand. Once I find a product, then I will go and I will take like the top 10 sellers of that product, not by revenue, but by dollar, by units sold, because I need to figure out where are they making their sales? How are they making their sales on Amazon? And so that's based on units, not by dollars. And then I look at it. So if you do a search, you know, for like, say, what's a good example? I think I give a spy camera, a mini spy camera. If you type in mini spy camera in Amazon, you're going to get a bunch of different spy cameras come up. Some of these cameras are kind of round, and they look like they would be on your outside of your house by your porch or your garage to watch the yard or watch the car or something. Other ones look like they're something for a baby, like a nanny cam or something you leave in the room with the baby while it's sleeping. And other ones look like they're like a little square box that you might be able to hide somewhere. You could hide it in the bookshelf, or you could hide it somewhere that you want to spy on the wife or the husband or whatever, and have nobody know it's even around. So when I'm looking at the results for mini spy camera, I don't just take a Jungle Scout or a X-Ray, or which is Helium 10's version of Jungle Scout, or Market Intelligence's tool, and just sort it by units sold and go to take the top 10. No, I have to get in the mind of the customer. If I'm going to sell the little small one that's a square and that's going to be hidden inside a bookshelf, my only competition are the other little square ones. They're not the big round one that's going to be in the baby's room, or the other one that's going to be hanging out outside to watch the front door. So, because someone looking, typing mini spy camera and looking for that kind of camera has a different mental mindset. And so that's not my competition. They're on page one. So they're taking up some real estate there, but that's not really my competition. My competition is those little small hidden ones. So I'm going to go through the results and find the first 10 or the top 10 best selling by units of those ones that look like mine. I'm going to punch those into the Cerebro tool of Helium 10 all together, all in one big long string, basically. And that tool is going to then compare all 10 of those. It's going to go out and it's going to do a what's called a reverse ASIN search on all 10 of them and mesh it all together into one big like grid. And inside that big grid, I'm then able to apply some additional filters. Like I want at least 600 searches a month. I want, there's several other factors in there. And I will be able to eliminate that down to about, hopefully, 20 or more keywords that are driving most of the sales for these products. And then I'll take a look at those keywords, and there's going to be some of them that might take a lot of effort to launch. Maybe I got it's really competitive. Even though these guys are making sales on it, they're just really competitive. And there's going to be other ones that I'm like, look, this guy over here, product number 8 and 9, they're doing really well on this one keyword, but the other guys are missing this keyword. They're not even ranking on it. They kind of suck at doing Amazon. I'm like, I can go in there and crush them. They're just missing this opportunity. So that's going to be a keyword that I'm going to put down as this is one of the main keywords I may go after. So I'll continue doing that process to refine it and find 3 to 5 of the 20 or more that I'm going to really target in the beginning. I'll do my math and I'll say, okay, to rank for these, let's call it 3. Helium 10 gives you what's called a CPR method, which is basically how many do you need to give away. It's basically over an 8-day period. So if I look at this and it says I need to sell of these 3 collectively, I'll add them all up together. It says number 1, I need to sell 5 a day. Number 2, I need to sell 2 a day. Keyword number 3, I need to sell 6 a day. Well, 5 plus 2 plus 6 is 13. So I need to sell 13 a day. I need to whether I'm doing a giveaway with a viral launch or one of the big launch services, or I'm doing rebates or however, whatever your launch method, that's a whole different discussion. Whatever your launch method is, I need to put in my budget that I've got to give away or sell or in some way get to 13 sales a day between these 3 in order to rank on page 1. And I need to do that for 8 days. So 8 times 13 is 104. I think that's right. If my math's right, 104. So I need 104 units that I'm going to basically set aside of my production run that I need to give away to launch. And then I'm going to take a look. Okay, if I rank for these 3 keywords, I'm selling 13 per day. My factory takes a month to make this product. It's going to take me another month to get it shipped into Amazon. And it's going to take another, I never like to go under 1 month of inventory on Amazon. I really don't. I like to always have at least 30 days worth of inventory. So that means I need to take, that's 90 days. You add all those 3 up. And I'm going to add 10 extra days in there for something that's unexpected. It's going to get held up in customs. There's going to be a strike, a holiday. Something's going to happen. So that's 100 days. So I'm going to take 100 times 13 units because I'm trying to target 13 units per day. So I'm going to place an order for 1,300 units, not the MOQ that was 1,000 because that's what the manufacturer said. That's what a lot of people do. I need 1,300 units, plus I need those 104 that I need to launch with. And I'm going to add a little bit extra because there might be a few damages or replacements. So I'm going to probably order about 1,500 units of this. And that's what I'm going to does my budget. And this does, like we're talking about earlier, it's my $4,000. Is that enough to order 1,500 units? If that answer comes back as no, then I'm like, damn it. I either got to come up with more money from somewhere and I can't take it from my 10,000 that I have because I still need to leave that cushion. Or I got to look for another product. Even though this is a great opportunity, it doesn't make sense for me to do it. I'm most likely going to fail. Like you said, with that client that came to you and said, don't do this. So I won't do it. I don't want to be one of those 90 or 95% that fails. I'll find something. I'll find another product that fits in there. And that's why the more money you have to start, the more options you have out there. You might be able to do this on versus if you're starting with a much lower, you're going to be much more limited. And you're going to be fighting at the lower ends. I don't like to sell anything under $20. You know, a lot of people are happy selling $13.99, $10.99. To me, the margins aren't there. That's where everybody goes because the barrier to entry is much lower. You can buy things for a pound or two and sell them for $9 or $10. So that's where everybody's at. So even if I find a great opportunity and I start doing good, it's too easy for someone else just to come in and knock me off. And I might have a nice 3 or 4 or 5 month run and then I'm off at page one. So that's part of the process of how I look at it. I mean, it gets a lot more detailed than that, but that's kind of a big overview picture.
It's really, really helpful. And so the price point you're saying at is over $20. Is that what you were saying as well?
That's me personally. Yeah, I don't like to sell under 20.
No, that makes a lot of sense. I think, again, a lot of this stuff comes down to budget. And yeah, you know, people like to, this is almost, I don't know what it is, kind of almost like a form of socialism, which I'm not being pro or against, but it just seems a bit odd that people get very shirty about the idea that shirty is very British, by the way, probably feel annoyed, angry, but the idea that you have to have a certain amount to actually set up a business. But there's always been the case, and it's just the same with Amazon. Yeah. So once again, if you have a small budget and that means it limits your options ridiculously, then go get a bigger budget. And if that means you save up for 6 months of the day job, having maybe talk to your boss or God forbid, go and do some extra work or get some overtime or an evening job to give you enough money to do this properly, then that's way better than doing some half version, right? I mean, any thoughts on that?
No, I agree 100% with that. You're better off to give yourself the best chance of success. If you're not giving yourself the best chance of success, why are you doing it?
Yeah, absolutely right. Listen, we better wrap this up because I know we've got some advanced stuff to talk about for the 10K Collective podcast listeners. And you've got to get back to running your many, many different businesses and your different income streams. But Kevin, as ever, you know, it's like in a way drinking from a fire hose, but actually it's not because it's extremely beautifully put, because I guess you've told 100,000 people or whatever, I don't know how many people you've touched over the last few years that you've been talking about this, but it's just so much wisdom from the front line of being a seller yourself, of teaching incredible numbers of people to do it, of using every tool out there and being able to just see the overview of this. So fantastic stuff. If people want to get in touch more, and you've mentioned your course and the masterminds, how do people find out more about that stuff?
Probably the best way is to go to amzmarketer.com, and that'll redirect you over to my Facebook page for that. It's probably the best way to follow me. If I do have a course, but it's freedomticket.com, and then I do events. Like I have an event coming up called AMZ Masters. It's for new sellers. It's going to be in Austin, Texas in August. It's like 50 people. It's very intensive, 22 speakers, very intensive 3 days. Doing a tour of an Amazon FBA fulfillment center. And if you're more advanced, I do an event called the Billion Dollar Seller Summit. They averaged back in October $6.1 million of the attendees there. It's about 90 people. So it's a very high level networking and training event. Next one's not going to be till May of next year, though. And then I'm the lead mentor, I guess is what they call me, for the Helium 10 Elite. Which is a monthly, it's like $400 a month, but it's monthly training for more advanced sellers. So if you're more advanced, I don't recommend that for beginners, but if you're doing over $25,000 a month on Amazon, then it can be a good value for you. You'll get a lot from it. So those are probably the best ways. But if you just need one way, amzmarketer.com.
Great. So the just to reiterate the thing, if you're doing over $25,000 a month, you're the lead trainer for what was that exact course again?
It used to be called Illuminati Mastermind for the first 2 years, and then we changed the name, or they changed the name back in February to Helium 10 Elite. So basically, Helium 10 is a software company, and you pay. I think they have a plan that's $97 a month and $197 a month, depending on your level. But they have another one that they just put in. It's $397 a month. So that includes all the software tools, their entire software suite, plus the monthly training. It's about a 4.5 hours of monthly training of high level stuff. And then they get to go free to meetups and trainings. And there's a bunch of other benefits to it. But so that's more for the higher level guys who already know the basics, and they're looking for that competitive edge on, you know, ManyChat bots or on ways to get more. Like, we had a guy yesterday. We had our training for June yesterday, and a guy, you know, about selling your business, and he named like 20 different things you can do to help sell your business. For example, something I didn't realize. He's like, look, when you're selling your Amazon business, if you go to masterminds, I know you have masterminds. Let's say you spend $5,000 to go to a mastermind for the ticket, and then you spend another $5,000 in your hotel and travel expenses. That's 10 grand. Well, you're deducting that as an expense from your company, from your Amazon business, and you just had a $10,000 educational expense, or however you classify it. I said, actually, that gets put back when you sell your business. That's what's called an add back. And you can add that back to your profits. And when you add that back to your profits, you actually, depending on where you sell your company for, whether you get a multiple of 2 or maybe you get a multiple of 5, but even if you just get a multiple of 2 on your profits, going to that mastermind, not only does it hopefully make you some good connections and some good networking, and you learn a few things that are going to help you in your business, but it actually made you $20,000 when you sell your business. And I didn't realize that. He's like, yeah, most people don't know this. So he was listing all these little like things you can do, you know, your credit card points, your mileage points, you know, if you're putting all your PPC through a credit card to earn dollars or to earn points on an airline, you can actually add some of that back in and increase what you sell your company for. All these little things. So that's the kind of stuff that we teach that can just put a lot of money in people's pockets that you don't hear on podcasts or you don't hear out there anywhere.
That's certainly not something I've come across. I mean, I can say that as somebody who runs a podcast and spoken to an awful lot of Amazon sort of experts and, you know, speak to a lot of high-level sellers in masterminds and what have you. That is news to me, the ad-back thing. So that's an example of the quality of what you're offering there. So amazing stuff, Kevin. We better leave it there. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast. That's absolutely amazing stuff.
No problem. Glad to be here, and hope this has helped some people. And guys that are out there, you just go out there and crush it, and don't be afraid to do this. Give it a shot. If it fails for you, don't give up, because it's a beautiful opportunity.
Yeah. Thank you so much for coming on.
Sure.
Hey there, this is Michael, and saying thank you for listening to the Amazing FBA episode you just listened to. Just want to mention that I mentioned at the top of the show our sister podcast, the 10K Collective e-commerce podcast, which is for 6, 7, and 8-figure sellers on Amazon. Specifically, that's who we're geared to. I'm sure that people doing bigger numbers will still have a lot of things to learn from it. And people doing smaller numbers, sure, but it's not going to be immediately actionable for you. So if that is you, keep listening to the Amazing FBA podcast. But if you're 6, 7, or 8 figures on Amazon or e-commerce, I really think you should check it out. So I just want to give you a flavor of what's coming up, or rather just a bit of a list. Not deeply exciting as podcasts go, but I just wanted to, if you're just checking it out, know whether it's for you and what sort of topics we cover. Here's what's coming up. So first of all, an interview with our own Ashley Pierce from the 10K Collective Mastermind, who is talking about his last year in e-commerce, where he went from $750,000 in 2018 in turnover to a run rate this year of $1.25 million. So that's from scratch in 3 years. Super smart man, and he had a lot of the right skills going in. And let's be clear about that. But he didn't have tons of capital, just the conventional amount. So I still think that's an incredible result. And also, he's a really nice guy and a very, very clear-minded and feet-on-the-ground business thinker. So there's so much value. If nothing else, check that out. Really cannot urge you enough. I mean, these guys that have been in the Mastermind for nearly 2 years now have just honed their game to the nth degree. I've never heard quality discussion like I hear in there. And I don't say that because it's about me. It's not about me. I'm just privileged to work with some super smart and great people. So do check it out. Other things coming up then, lots and lots of industry expert interviews. Here's a flavour. And honestly, this is about half the list of people who've agreed to come on for an interview. So several of these are already recorded. So with Ryan Shaffet from XCube Manufacturing, we are going to be talking about custom manufacturing in China. He's been out there about 18 years. And custom manufacturing, I can't emphasise enough how much that is the future. If you're still just purely private labelling stuff, it's going to get harder and harder to make a profit with that business model. I mean, I think it's got a year or two left in it, but sooner or later you need to get onto custom manufacturing. So this is a hyper critical skill set that you should be learning, I believe, to future proof your business. Second is funding, which is another massive topic, how to fund growth, because any scaling business, as Vern Harnish says, growth sucks cash. This is the law of gravity of scaling. Therefore, we've got to look into raising capital, and one way is debt. And Bruce Mack is going to talk to us about that. Aaron O'Sullivan is coming on from Systems Culture Impact to talk about outsourcing and company culture. And again, if you're scaling up a business, you're going to have a very painful time if you keep trying to do it yourself. Even if you've hit, say, $1 million a year equivalent, which I know some people have without a VA, guess what? You're not going to get to 2 million without a VA or basically a proper team on board. So that's something that's definitely a big barrier to entry. And also, to put it on its head, something that will add to your comfort and enjoyment of your business if you go with it. So that's a few things that we got in depth, just in a bit more superficial detail. Chris Shipfling of Providium with Jason Somerville is going to be talking about selling your FBA business, and they have a private equity take on that from the Wall Street side. So really fascinating angle on that. FBA reimbursements with Ben Chambers. Amazon often owes about $50,000 to $100,000 for any serious seller at some points in the year. How do you get your hands on that? It's just a fantastic source of cash, apart from anything else. So Amazon's got your cash. If you can get it out of the system, guess what? That's fantastically healthy for your business. Ash Munger's talking about quality control from China. He's got an incredibly detailed system for doing that. He's been out in China running IMEX sourcing for 9 years now, so he seriously knows his business backwards and sideways and in detail. Connor Gillivan's going to talk about the quick outsourcing system that FreeUp represents and how to outsource quickly and easily. Pauline Masson came on this morning. We talked about pricing, which is a very underrated and very important thing for driving profits. Will Churnland's coming back on, and we're going to talk about evaluating the competition from a real sort of standpoint of somebody who's not just looking at the numbers, although Will is super smart with numbers, but from the point of view of the overall competitive landscape. Really, as ever, Will's a brilliant Amazon thinker, always worth hearing. Kevin King's coming back on, not even sure what we're going to be talking about yet with Kevin, but you know what, he's always a super smart guy when it comes to the marketing side, so I'm sure we have lots to learn from him. What else we got coming up? Amazon account suspension with Joshua Price, launching to overseas markets with John Kant, PPC advertising and profit margins with Mike Zagare of PPC Entourage. What else? Chris Rawlings is coming back from Judo Launch. Presumably we'll be talking about launch. Alex Oxford is coming on to talk about sales tax. He is super smart at explaining this stuff in very simple terms, but yet dealing with all the details as well. Alex is absolutely a critical person to listen to if you sell in the USA. Kostas Anastasiadis is coming back to talk about short-term funding. Brad Moss is coming back, who used to run Seller Central, so he's a super sharp guy as well. China sourcing with Manuel Bekvar. Law for Amazon sellers with Paul Ruffelson. Augustus Kligas is coming back on to talk about various different topics. John Cavendish talk about translations. Paul Harvey to talk about chatbots. Brian Johnson talk about PPC. Greg Mercer to talk about product research. Nadine Eich to talk about Germany and customer service in Germany. And probably going to get my old accountant Penny Lowe back to talk about bookkeeping basics. Whew. We have, as you can tell, an incredible amount of really practical, useful content coming up, a lot of which is already recorded and is definitely coming out over the next few weeks. So Get yourself over there, folks. It's just a place you need to be. This is not just a bunch of let's fill the airways with the latest kind of hack that's going to die in 2 months. I'm taking care to really focus on content that is as evergreen as possible. Why? Because then you listen once and implement over multiple years or at least months, and then you get the payoff over time, so you get better return on your listening time, if you like. And I think that's a really important metric. Return on listening for me is something I aim to give you in spades. So get yourself over there. 10K Collective is the thing you need to look for. 10K Collective e-commerce podcast, to give it the full title. You can look on iTunes, aka Apple Podcasts apps, or Stitcher. We should be on Spotify any minute now, and we're just waiting to get ourselves on Google Play and Google Podcasts. So it will be more and more available. If you can't find it on your listening device, your preferred device, then just go to the website and you can listen directly there. 10kcollective.com. That's 10k, 10k for kilo. Collective is collective.com. That's 10kcollective.com. Thanks so much for listening to such a very, very lengthy post-roll pitch, if you like. I'm not actually selling anything, so it's not a pitch in any strict sense. It's free and it always will be. Of course, we will mention paid services from time to time, but I believe in giving like 95%, 99% value and a little pitch at the end. So it's not going to be a pitch fest. We are just aiming to build massive goodwill and getting ourselves out there and known. And of course, we hope to attract some wonderful people to our masterminds, and if people can use the services that some of our experts provide, so much the better. But really, that's our main thrust, is to get ourselves out there and build goodwill. So you know more than you're ever going to need to know in life about this podcast. Get yourself over there and listen. Stop listening to Amazing FBA. What are you still doing here? I'm going to go and have a cup of tea. I suggest you go and do the same, and I'll speak to you in the next show.